This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson.
The excellent new movie Blindspotting deals in complex ways with complex issues around race and gentrification and policing and injustice. But it's a drama leavened with all kinds of charm and comedy as well. And although it's almost entirely a realistic film, it is studded in a way I've never seen before, with rap and verse in big and small moments throughout the movie, in a way that is really central to the movie and its story. And to help me dig a little deeper into the linguistics of Blindspotting and some other movies is the poet and essayist Maya Phillips. Maya, welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks for having me.
Instead of just letting me rant on, why don't you give our listeners a basic idea of what Blindspotting is and is about?
Sure. So it's very much based in Oakland, very much an Oakland film. And it's about these two friends, childhood friends, played by David Diggs, who's known for Hamilton, and
yes.
Rafael Casal, who is known in the poetry world. He did
is
Slam.
He?
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
he
really?
Did Slam. So it's focusing on David's character, Colin, and it's the last days of his probation. And he's just trying to get through it, not violate his probation. But he sees one night a black man, an unarmed black man, get shot several times
in
the
back. And he is a black man, by the way.
Yes, yes, yes. Get shot several times as he's running away from a white cop. So he's dealing with those in emotional ramifications throughout the movie. And then he's also just dealing with his friend Miles, a white man, who is just hot-tempered, totally crazy. And they're just navigating their relationship to Oakland as it's being gentrified and their own issues with race and their relationship to each other.
Well,
that.
Well put. and they've grown up together in the same neighborhood, in this mm-hmm. predominantly black neighborhood in Oakland, as did David Diggs, the actor playing Colin, and Rafael Casal, the actor playing Miles.
Yep.
And they do rap to each other in little fragmentary ways mm-hmm. throughout the movie, but it's not in any kind of stylized, you know, La La Land way, right?
It's totally different. It's something totally unique, I think, that you have these options that are more musical style.
Right.
And I think it's amazing that this feels more true to life.
Right. Let's play a clip of them just doing what they do.
Grand opening of the new Quick Way.
Hey.
Wish I knew a quicker way. Whips is sweet getting tooth decay, all these candy cars. Look like they owned by fancy stars.
But it's just some motherfuckers pulling up on the boulevard.
Hey.
That's David Diggs doing most of that rap in progress with Rafael Casal. Did it seem stylized at all, or is that just, oh, no, there are guys like that?
When I was reading about this movie, I read a lot about how it came to be. And they were saying that they know people like this, that this is part of the lifestyle, the part of the environment in Oakland, that they grew up in an environment where everyone they know had this awareness of language. And, you know, it wasn't in a performative way, perhaps, but it's just matter of fact that there's just this, you know, awareness of the way you speak and this awareness of rhythm and just in cadence.
A little later, we see moments when only Miles, the white guy, is doing rap-like things, like when he's trying to sell this sailboat that they've found on one of their jobs as movers, clearing out an old house. Let's listen to that.
Hey, got it. What that boat do? Hey.
No way.
Shit, man, I got that jug. Sailing, fishing, floating, or fucking. Get you a flight to Boston in a private function. Perfect for getting into something. Let me put you on that water world, bruh.
Bruh, is it hot or cold, though?
Warm to the touch, no burn, no.
What's the intel on the Vin Diesel?
No fingerprints, bruh.
Dusty trail?
Theory, it's Gucci.
That's because I can't be running away with something out of pocket. You gotta dig? Get burped, and I gotta peel out for the Daytona 500 because I got cameras tucked. Niggas got laundry, no bleach.
On mamas, this was in the cut.
Rebuild jug, though? What's the part two?
No sequel, bruh. Pockets is touching, so we're just trying to get it off into a movie.
Cuz, I'm gonna have to let that marinate one time.
Bruh, if you're really about that life, this is the come up right here. Plus, three bills ain't nothing but a small thing to a giant like yourself. I say, let's make moves. You throw me that 300 right there. I'm gonna put the woo-wop to the rear view, and less is more, you dig?
Clip the woo-wop to the rear view?
By far.
Fast.
What'd he say?
Oh, I have no idea. They gave me $300, so this boat sold
motherfucker's soul.
Mouthpiece for days, Brett.
People like the way it makes it feel, man. They like the bounce of that shit. Everybody listen more when you make it sound pretty. I'll tell you right now.
It's hilarious. I love it. Definitely the pace with which they went through the exchange. You know, it just was very fast. And just the density of colloquial languages, like just the slang in there, that most of which I had never heard of. I don't even know. They could be, you know, totally making that up. But
I wondered about that.
Yeah. I think they said that most of that was real, but
yeah.
I don't know for sure.
Yeah. I mean, is that a bad thing that this white guy is speaking in this incredibly dense vernacular of black neighborhoods, or is it a funny thing?
I mean, it's complicated because obviously this is what he has come to know just in terms of how he grew up. And this is how he relates to the world, which is definitely skewed toward a black perspective, even though he is obviously not black. But I think what becomes problematic is especially when he uses that language to make money. Because we see that in a larger context play out, you know, white people profiting off of the black experience. And of course, yeah, that's a problem.
So he's being Eminem, essentially.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Although he seems much more appealing than Eminem, frankly, the character.
Yeah, that's one thing that I really loved about the movie, that he's not just a villain. He's not like the bad white guy.
Not at all.
We understand him as a sympathetic character, and it's not just him. It's also the way that Colin relates to him, because Colin also participates in understanding him as part of that black experience, how they talk to each other.
The show will resume very, very shortly. But first, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Studio 360 Show. And now, back to the podcast. So there is a moment where Colin finally, after not being the guy who is the slick rapper, finally near the end of the film, there's this kind of extraordinary aria. And I don't want to give too much away because I don't want to be the spoiler of this. I guess we'll say that he finds himself as part of his job in the home of a cop he knows is bad and is holding this guy at gunpoint, this white cop. And this is what he starts to say.
You might think you know what's happening, but you don't feel it like we do. To feel it, it has to be you. Cut you, but you don't know what the cut do. You all reflex, but when reflux bleeds the gut, then you see the faces. Leave the vases. Moving people in and out for a fee. Feeding this town decay an appetite of me. Appetizer, huh? I must be tasty, but I stay angry because y'all get hazy. I'm the one out here stuck on a clock, loving a curfew to keep me off the block. Fuck, what time is it? What time? Nope. Fuck it, I did my time. How come every time you come around, you monsters got me feeling like a monster in my own town? And I say it while I'm rapping, nigga, because everyone conditioned to listen to a rapping nigga, but I'm rapping to the active nigga. You the one capping niggas. So quick to flash, you feel like you're passion, nigga. Hitting us till a headstone stuck in the mud. We stuck it out, it turned us into some thugs. Got a whole city brand new and they kicking out us. Maybe we should both break shit, make a fuss. I am both pictures. See both pictures. Don't be blind spotting me, nigga. See both pictures. Guess I'm just a little bigger than a picture, playing chicken with a cliff, but I ain't never been a flincher. Block is getting hotter. I'ma be the one to bring the winter. Fuck it, everybody want a body of a cop. The splinter, I mean, why wouldn't I dead him? He's splitting wigs for 80K a year and ain't from here. He'll miss him if he disappear. Filling up with fear, I know you feel it. I've been feeling it for years. In fact, I don't remember ever never feeling it. The one who going dummy never felt the need to run, but I've been sprinting till I limp across the finish with a gun up in my blind spot, really. Ain't too hard to figure that you probably never really felt the pressure of a nigga, but you know what? I ain't never felt the pressures of a trigger.
I mean, tell me what you made of this as a poet.
Well, I mean, I loved his end rhymes as a poet. But I think this whole large poetic rap, whatever you want to call it, monologue,
Yeah. That's
a point when I think it does break from reality a little bit, because we're not going to have this heated exchange and we're not going to have a whole monologue. You know, it's like what happens in a play. But I think that's important because this is the one point in the movie where Colin is able to actually speak the truth of his black experience here.
And Miles is, by the way, in the room at this point.
Yeah, yeah. But we're not even paying attention to him.
Right.
He's unimportant at this point. And, you know, the whole movie, Colin's kind of trapped. You know, he's in this situation where he's set up to fail.
Although he's the good guy.
Yeah, even though he's the good guy. Yeah. And finally, this confrontation kind of sets him over the edge. And, like, we finally have the platform for him to speak as a black man. But it's not even in a way that's necessarily real.
Right.
Yeah, it's totally stylized. So he can speak as long as he makes it sound pretty, like they say elsewhere in the movie.
Oh, that's it. I hadn't even thought of that. So you're saying that this presentation, because it's so presentational and stylized finally, that is also a different form of oppression? That he can't just speak, that he has to rap in order to be heard?
I mean, yeah, that's what they're talking about, because Miles has the option to use that.
Right.
He can just elect to use the black language or he cannot. But
right.
For Colin, you know, they talk about in the movie him, like, fitting the description, him being the kind of man that the police are going to be looking for. And in that same way, he can only speak in a true way and within the form that falls within the expectations of, like, a white society.
Right. I gotta say, I've never been as moved by a rap as I was by this thing in this film. As stylized as it is, we're meant to see this as finally being able to say the truth in a exquisite way, right?
Yes. I also think that part of that, what you were saying, that, you know, it's the movie sets it up, is we do see the symbols come back. He mentions the tree, the cut down tree. We see that before. We've mentioned the vases and the faces. So all of those things
refers to a line with his ex-girlfriend in the past.
Yes, yes. And where the movie's title comes from. So, you know, all of those things are in the back of our mind as we see this really heated exchange with this protagonist we are rooting for.
Colin here uses the N-word here both to describe black man, but calls this white cop that as well. But in their big showdown, he and his friend that has happened just before this, they have an argument that involves that very thing.
You ain't got to worry about you changing up your clothes and your lifestyle. You ain't got to worry about none of that shit. You're a big black dude with fucking braids in Oakland. Nobody is misreading you, Colin.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
my nigga.
Yeah, bro.
No, say it.
What?
Say nigga.
Oh, fuck you.
Say it. Say, yeah, my nigga.
No.
Why? Why?
Oh, come the fuck on.
What? But why?
Because you know I don't say that shit.
What? So it's okay for me to call you nigga?
You've been calling me that since we were fucking 12 years old. I'm not going to stop you now. Do what the fuck you want to say. What you want to say.
If that is so disrespectful, then why is it okay for me to call you that? You're a fucking nigga. You're a fucking nigga, man.
What are we talking about?
You out here acting an ass like it ain't no fucking consequences for that shit. And every nigga who sees me thinks that I do the same dumb fucking ignorant gun carrying shit that you do. But I've been taking care of my shit.
That's David Diggs and Rafael Casal. Talk about what we're seeing and hearing here.
We're talking about, again, how Miles is able to participate in the black culture. He understands them on equal planes. They came up in the same neighborhood. They shared their childhood. So they have a similar experience. But, you know, Colin's saying that that's not true. He's saying that he's not going to be misread
right.
in society.
And Miles is kind of jealous of Colin.
Yeah, it forces him to come to terms with the fact that, you know, he does have a level of white privilege, even if he's from that same neighborhood.
Right.
He's still white.
Right, right, exactly. Why was it essential, I guess, for rap to be used in this movie the way it was?
Because rap is a form originated in, it was a black form, and it was commodified. And you see, you joked about Eminem earlier, but, like, it is being used by other people. There's also the idea that rap is also a form that is we're very aware of the aesthetic, you know? It's very much involved in this aesthetic. So we have an idea of a black man who is a rapper, and that is packaged and it's sold. And, you know, it just seems like they're very well linked.
Right. Obviously, I mean, back in 1602, Shakespeare was creating plays in verse. Has there, in the modern age, non-Shakespearean movies, have we seen anything like this? Have we seen verse used in this way?
One movie I can think of, it's not quite the same because obviously we're talking about specifically the context of race, but the Adam Driver movie where he's speaking poems of Ron Padgett, Patterson.
Oh, good point. Yes, right.
And again, that's different because we're not meant to take that as dialogue. The poems are kind of just in the background or happening.
And we know they're poems.
Yes. But in terms of this particular kind of incorporating the verse into the movie, I can't really think of anything.
Yeah. No, I can't either. And again, I feel as though you needed 30 or 40 years of rap to sort of embed enough in the culture that you could pull this off in a mainstream film, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and we were talking about, you know, Daveed Diggs being famous for Hamilton. I mean, that certainly plays into it as well.
Yes. So it's a terrific movie that has, to some degree, to my unhappiness, has been eclipsed in this summer of movies by two other buzzy, tough-minded dramedies about racism and blackness in America, which is to say Spike Lee's Black Klansman and Boots Riley's Sorry to Bother You, all of which, I guess, in addition to this film, black and white ways of speaking are subjects, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. In Black Klansman, you have based on a real story, of course, you have a black man present over the phone as a white man just to, you know, try to infiltrate the Klansman meeting.
Based on this real-life Colorado Springs story that happened in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And then in Sorry to Bother You, the main character begins by being able to do this cartoonish version of a white voice as a telemarketer, although the movie goes well beyond that premise.
Yes, it definitely goes off into space after that.
Blindspotting, as I say, I mean, to me, it's subtler and more nuanced in how it deals with politics and all these issues that they deal with in common.
Yes. But I do think that all three movies have totally different goals. Like, you know, Black Klansman, it is telling a true story, even though it's fictionalized.
Right.
And that is going at it in a different kind of political bent. And Sorry to Bother You, as we said, is very outlandish. And it also focuses it also focuses more on the intersection of, like, race and capitalism.
Right.
What's interesting about Sorry to Bother You is that it's not only the matter of him using a white voice, because at some point in the movie, he's at a party and he's asked to perform his blackness.
Right.
And that's also a thing that can happen. So that's—
No, the evil white villain in that film says, no, rap.
Yeah.
Which is an excruciating scene, actually.
Yes, it is. Because he just, like, goes along with the most simplistic, cringeworthy, you know, performance of blackness that he can go for.
Yes.
You encounter that as a person of color, just trying to navigate all these different groups' expectations of how you should act.
Yeah. As we've said, these are very different films. But does it feel like, wow, here's all these movies that are getting all this attention, and should we take this as some pivotal inflection point for what American cinema can do when it deals with race?
I mean, I think so. What's really great for me when I'm watching it as a black person is that it really opens the door for different ways to talk about blackness. Because, you know, before there was, like, the black movie, and then there was, like, the handful of black actors who you would see in all the films. And, you know, that's not a comprehensive look of blackness. It's just, you know, it's very singular. And to be able to go to the theaters and see, like, black life portrayed, you know, with rapping or, you know, with verse or in a totally odd, bizarre, cartoonish way, Sorry to Bother You, that we have those options suddenly where white audiences always had.
Correct. I was struck by your piece about this film, which made me really want to see it, and I'm very glad I did and that we got to talk about it. So thank you.
Thank you for having me again.
Essayist and poet Maya Phillips, thank you. Thanks for listening, and you can subscribe to Studio 360 at iTunes or Overcast or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts.